I'm here with Ursula Rudenberg, Pacifica Affiliate Network Manager with the Pacifica Foundation. Hi, Ursula.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for taking the time today to bring the KRFY listeners a bit of the behind-the-scenes work of community radio and the stations and the organizations that help and support it. Why don't we start with you, because you've been involved with community radio for a long time. How did you get involved with community radio there in Ames, Iowa, and Pacifica Foundation?
Well, actually, I got involved with community radio when I moved to Los Angeles in the 1970s. I grew up in Iowa, but I went to Los Angeles to go to college. And I think it was 1971. And when I was there, I was kind of spinning through the dial on the radio, and I discovered KPFK, which is the Pacifica station in Los Angeles. And I had just never heard anything like that. It sounded completely different from anything I recognized. And at first I thought it sounded kind of hokey and weird, but because it didn't have the sound of commercial radio or even of public radio. And then I kind of got hooked, and I think there were two things that really, well, I mean, there were a lot of things about it that were really wonderful. But I remember that they reported on the Watergate break-in, and I'm dating myself here, but for my generation, that was kind of a big thing that happened. And I remember they reported on it a year before it was broken by the Washington Post. And I remember listening to that, and obviously they didn't have the informant, they didn't have Deep Throat, you know, the way the Washington Post had. But they did try to report on it, and they said that it was a significant event. And I thought they were, you know, exaggerating. I thought they were kind of, you know, making things up. And then a year later, you know, the story broke with the Washington Post, and it just gave me a lot of respect, and it made me realize that this was a medium where I would hear things first. And that has proven to be true throughout my whole life in community radio. There's just so many times when I know what's going on and other people don't, and people ask me, so how did you know that? And I kind of like, I don't know. And then I realize that it's because I listen to community radio. Another thing that really kind of won my heart was that when the Vietnam War ended in the early 70s, and there were all these stories about, you know, what a nightmare it was when Saigon fell. And Pacifica had somebody in Saigon reporting live from the streets of Saigon. And I just got a completely different story. I heard people singing in the street. I heard huge celebrations. And it was just such a different and such a beautiful, you know, description of what was happening than what I was hearing in the American press. And it just made a big impression on me. And so I just really, you know, once you kind of get the bug with community radio, you get really hooked because you're realizing you're getting something really good. And so that's how I got, you know, became a fan. And I think it's easy today with, we have the internet, we have the, you know, information highway. It's a completely different world, but it's hard to describe today what it was like to have so little access to information before the internet. And in a way, Pacifica kind of provided what the internet does today. It was one place in the American media landscape where you could get uncensored information. And it was really, it was a passionate experience to have access to that. I grew up partially in Europe, so I was really aware of how how much American media was censored. And so I really, I fell in love with Pacifica. I admired it, and I felt this kind of passion for it. Sorry, I have noisy
That's what we get with Zoom these days.
Sorry about that. And so then when I moved to New York City, I knew that Pacifica had a station in New York, and so I became a BAI fan and, you know, listened to it day and night, and it was an exciting station to listen to. And then in the in 2000, the Pacifica struggle happened, where there was a takeover, a hostile takeover of Pacifica. And the takeover came to New York in the winter of 2000. It's called the Christmas Coup, because they took over the station a few days before Christmas. And I had, it's kind of a long story, which I won't get into, but I ended up playing a leading role in the fight back. And it was a very exciting experience, and it connected me to huge forces, to, you know, international journalists. I worked very closely with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, and it was just it was a kind of experience that's very hard to describe today. You could never do something like that today, post 9/11. But it was an exciting and powerful experience where I really got to experience being a full-time activist and even going to jail in New York City. Mr. Giuliani threw us all in jail for a while, which was not fun. But in that struggle, I got to work with very, very distinguished and knowledgeable people, and it was kind of like a crash course in politics and campaigns, and that resulted eventually my job as a foot soldier in that, or even a leader in that movement, ended up with my having a job at Pacifica.
So it sounds like through that struggle, Pacifica became stronger and became a platform for many other programs. I'm trying to get a sense of, I know that we are members of Pacifica Foundation, and through that KRFY is a member. And through that membership, we get Letters in Politics. I'm pretty sure we get Democracy Now!, Sprouts, and many other shows. So Pacifica is a platform now. It sprung from a radio station in Los Angeles, KPFK.
Pacifica was started around between 1948 and 49 in Berkeley, California, with KPFA, which still is kind of the mothership for Pacifica. It was started as a nonprofit organization in Berkeley, and it was started by a group of pacifists who had been in a detention camp during World War II because they didn't want to fight in the war. And it was led by a man named Blue Hill. And they decided that they wanted to try this type of media that they thought would foster understanding and peace. And so they found a radio frequency in Berkeley, California, and started KPFA. So Pacifica started as a nonprofit organization that owned one radio station. And then over time, and you know, it was an incredibly revolutionary idea. It kind of blew everybody's mind. And people from all over the country flocked to KPFA to participate in this brave new experiment. And eventually the station, you know, got too small for all these people. And so they started to branch out and form the basis of the Pacifica Affiliate Program. These were stations that weren't Pacifica stations, but were connected professionally. And then
that's what we are, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then four other stations were donated to Pacifica itself, one in Los Angeles, KPFK, one in Houston, KPFT, and then you had WPFW in Washington, D.C., and WBAI in New York. Those were all stations that local people donated to Pacifica. So Pacifica has five stations of its own.
Okay.
And and then you have all these other people that branched out and started other radio stations. There was a pioneer named Lorenzo Milam, and and he ran around the country and started community radio stations. He came from KPFA, but he kind of took the idea to many other places, and the concept of community radio has spread. So Pacifica started the concept of community radio. It's not the only, community radio was also conceived of in Bolivia around the same time by a bunch of miners that were on strike. So it was kind of a great idea that took hold simultaneously in the United States and in Bolivia. And today it has spread throughout the whole world. Anywhere there's democracy movements in the world, there's community radio as well.
So not just the actual entity, but the real mood and spirit of information, the information being in the moment and fresh and valuable and viable. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the struggle made Pacifica stronger. I think it damaged the organization terribly. Mm. It did make the Pacifica affiliate network stronger. It did, because Pacifica did have affiliates prior to this struggle, which really was an attempt, a kind of a covert attempt on the part of government operatives to silence Pacifica and to destroy the organization. And it's still debatable whether they succeeded or not. But some of the affiliates really played a role in holding holding the place for the mission while Pacifica was taken over, and played a leadership role afterwards in working with me to develop an affiliate program we have today, which has turned out to be extremely fortunate and stable relationship.
Right. I was going to say it's probably valuable and viable for Pacifica, but for us, it's essential to have the kind of programming that we can get from Pacifica Foundation. I think, you know, when we ask our listeners here at KRFY, what are some of the shows, the programming that means something to them, oftentimes Democracy Now! Is at the top of the list, amongst other things. Sprouts, if people get up early enough. Things, I know that that's kind of a homegrown show there. And so one question, and then we'll move on to the value of community radio, but and we kind of touched on it. So there's memberships from your affiliates that kind of sustains Pacifica. But one of the questions I've always had is the in-depth coverage that Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez do with Democracy Now!, even Mitch Deseret and Letters in Politics. How in the world do they keep going? Where is their base of support? Is it grants? Is it all kinds of funding? Is it broad-based?
Well, Mitch works for KPFA, and KPFA is a station that is well-supported by its community. And so he's a staff person at KPFA. Democracy Now! is an interesting show. It was started by Pacifica in the 1990s. And the concept really that was the founding, the seed idea for Democracy Now! Was to take a show like All Things Considered on NPR with that level of production value and to flip it over and do the same type of thing from a grassroots perspective instead of a perspective of the people in power. Today, Democracy Now! Has inspired a lot of other programs, and especially by women. Amy really kind of broke a glass ceiling with her work there. But before Democracy Now!, the production values on many Pacifica programs really was lower than it is today. And it was kind of a revolutionary thing to hear that level of production. And now, how do they do it? Well, it was a show that Pacifica put all its resources into developing in the 1990s. Today, they have independent status. They're no longer technically belong to Pacifica. You have to understand with a show like Democracy Now!, I mean, Amy Goodman is an incredibly accomplished journalist. She went to Harvard University. The show has the capacity to have connections that most people don't. And over the years, its revolutionary work has really attracted a tremendous amount of funding. So that's a show that's funded not only by, you know, people that pay people for the show, but also, you know, with many grants and many, many private funders and grants.
I see that. One of the things, I mean, I don't know what we would do without Democracy Now! Because it's different in the fact that it's so immediate. And it's not quite produced the same way, but the content is viable and true. I mean, it's just really great show. And, you know, yeah, it's a very valuable show. But there's many, you know, that we've talked about. Just for a minute, I want to just let our listeners know that I'm speaking with Ursula Rudenberg. She's the manager of the Pacifica Affiliate Network, but she's associated with Pacifica Foundation, long-term community radio person and supporter through the work that you've done for a long time. So you have you've been in the trenches a long time. And I just wonder if you could say for a moment, because some people say, well, aren't you, when we talk about KRFY, aren't you a public radio station? Well, we're community radio. And there is a little bit of a difference. And from your experience, how would you describe that?
Well, let me tell you a story that I think kind of illustrates that. I was at a discussion, kind of a roundtable discussion at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, a while ago, and this was during the Iraq War, when we were still right at the beginning of the Iraq War. And there was somebody at the table from NPR, and there was myself. And I said to this person, there was this news story where the sons of Saddam Hussein were captured before he was, and they were killed. And their bodies were put on public display. I don't know if you remember that, but it was early on in the war in Iraq. And I said, you know, at the time when that happened, I was in Iowa, and so I heard this on public radio, and the announcer said that the American military was surprised that the effect of displaying these bodies didn't have a cooling effect on the what they call the insurgency in Iraq. And when I heard that, I said to myself, now that sounds like they're reading a press release from the government. And so I said to the guy, I said this to the man that was sitting next to me. He said, yes, of course, that was a, you know, that we were reading something that released from the government, and he was quite proud of it. And I said, well, you know, I flipped over then to Democracy Now! To see how Democracy Now! Was covering the same event. And they were interviewing an English journalist who was able to articulate very clearly what it means in Arab culture and Muslim culture to display somebody's body in public like that. And the explanation that this is, in Islam, this is a desecration. And I said, don't you think that if we're going to invade a country like this, that it's safer for everybody if we understand culturally, you know, what our actions in that country mean, so that we can understand the results of our actions? And I didn't mean to do this, but that this was before an audience at Wesleyan with the students. And when I said that, they all jumped up and started cheering, which I did not mean to embarrass this guy like that. But I think it kind of illustrates, you know, the difference between community radio and public radio, because public radio gets most of its funding from Congress. And it is beholden to the government. And so, yes, they are going to read the press releases of the government. Community radio is not going to do that. It just isn't. It's going to tell the story from the point of view of people like you and me who don't have power but are affected by world events. And I think that's in a nutshell the difference. I can get into history and I won't go into it too much, but there actually was a period in the 1980s where NPR very consciously transitioned from kind of a community-based sound and behavior, kind of more of a grassroots orientation, to essentially, even though it's non-commercial radio, the format and the model they use is that from commercial radio. And they eliminated all contact with volunteers and essentially broke their ties with local communities. So it's a very different set of goals now than they used to be closer, but today public radio is in a very different place than community radio.
Well, I think you hit on two things. The community radio stays very closely in touch and is actually dependent on local broadcasters and volunteers.
Yes.
I mean, you're there in Ames, Iowa. It's a small community. It doesn't have a university. We're here in North Idaho. We're a very small community. It's kind of a miracle that we have a community radio station, but it's because of volunteers and community-minded underwriters that support and our listeners. And without all of that and local content. So at one point in time, someone, could have been you, encouraged us to have a local content show. So we have the morning show on most mornings that make a difference. It connects people to the community with the spoken word over the radio. And then, of course, all the great music we play and things that people love like that too.
Yeah, before the internet happened, community radio really fulfilled that the need that the internet in many ways addresses now, for uncensored communication between everyday people instead of, hearing it from behind the wall of professionalism and kind of government messages, which is where public radio lives. I'm not putting public radio down completely because I listen to it. And they have some fantastic programming, but it's not a grassroots orientation, and it's not intended, to be in the same world that lay people live in.
I think that's it. Grassroots, that's what we are here for sure in our small community. And what does it take for a community radio to be strong and value to the community it serves? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think community radio always needs local voices. That's our wheelhouse. That's our great weapon. If we had a superpower, that's it. It's the ability to have an open door so that the community has a voice in the mass media, and it is really literally the embodiment of the First Amendment, which makes it an incredibly important part of democracy. I know that here in Iowa, during the even still today, the radio community radio station was able to give so much important information about COVID. I don't know about where you are, but our state, we don't have responsible leaders. We do have some responsible local leaders, but on the state level, we don't have real information coming to us, and so, the community radio station has really been able to perform that function, really life-saving information. So, that connection to the community is really important, and being able to respond to really specifically local needs, and also community radio can provide a level of creativity and entertainment that you hardly hear anywhere else. When I think back on why I love community radio so much, part of it is I remember shows that just were so much fun and were so imaginative. I remember during that there was a war in Yugoslavia, right? At one point the U.S. bombed Belgrade. And I don't even remember why we did that, but we did bomb Belgrade. And shortly after that, there was a community radio station in Belgrade, although Milosevic kept shutting them down, but they always managed to open themselves up again. And shortly after the bombing of Belgrade, they did a simulcast with WBAI in New York, where they fought a war against each other using cartoon sounds. So you had a Fred Flintstone attack, you know, responded to with a Woody Woodpecker, and it was absolutely hilarious. And then, of course, at the end, the Americans declared victory and the Yugoslavians contested. And it was just, you know, it was the kind of profoundness of hearing that kind of, you know, communication right after we had bombed them.
As you said, creativity, local voices. And when I think of local voices, I always tell broadcasters when they're doing their training, you don't have to be perfect. Just bring something you love. Bring something.
And that was Lou Hill, who's the founder of Pacifica. He wrote a thesis about that, which is kind of a fundamental document of community radio. And essentially what he says, and I think he called it the theory of listener sponsorship. And what he says in that is quite profound. He says that inspiration and great ideas and great visions come through individuals. And the role of community radio is to create a space for that to happen. And that's it's a really kind of a profound concept that he put forth. And it that is true. I mean, there have been so many times when I've been doing community radio, when I've been hearing something happening on the air, and I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe how lucky I am to be part of this moment where communication is happening, you know, and communication is profound. It really is. And community radio allows you and me and others in the community to participate in that, in the mass media. And that's so important, you know, that the power of communication, you never know where the next great idea is going to come from. And community radio is that space. It's that safe space for that to happen.
It's really true. You know, the community radio can create and should create a space for inspiration, and it is profound, as you say. I'm just saying your words. We have to kind of wrap it up here because this is a big, you've gone over a lot of information I did not know. But it's inspiring to think that we're part of a larger movement that is making a difference in small communities. I mean, we have to read our listeners. What are they looking for? But what are our broadcasters, the people in our community that want to take the time and energy, it does take a lot to put together a show, what they want to bring to the community. So we feel...
Yeah, and Susie, can I say something kind of on behalf of the value of your station?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is a movement that is, KRFY is part of a movement that is international. It's all over the world. And a few years ago, there used to be an international organization called AMARC, which was the International Community Radio Organization. And unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore, but they used to have conferences every 4 years. And I went to their conference in Buenos Aires in Argentina. I was very lucky to be able to go. And, you know, the people that I met there, it, for me, it was kind of like taking a cold shower, because here in the United States, we have the First Amendment. We have laws that govern our, you know, the protected dial. And so we take a lot of this free media thing for granted. We may not in the near future if, you know, things change in this country, because it could. But up until now, we've been very, very lucky to have all these protections. Most of the world does not have that. And I met people who literally are putting their lives on the line to be able to have community radio. And it was a whole different perspective, and their understanding of its value, its preciousness, was tactile. You know, it was tangible. There was nothing ever taken for granted. It was literally a dangerous activity. And it made me realize two things. One is that how lucky we are, and how we should never take this for granted, and we should always actively support it, because we could lose it at any time. It's just that we've been very lucky. And it's also made me realize that the need to communicate is a basic human need, that, you know, I was able to share with people from countries that I could never imagine having anything in common with. We understood each other because we all were part of this activity of fostering communication. So, you know, I mean, I met people from Libya, from Egypt, many of them now who are in jail or possibly even dead because of their activities. People are literally dying around the world for the right to do what we're doing. So, and we may lose that right too. I don't think, you know, the next 10 years could possibly be dangerous for community radio. So now more than ever, it's so important to support and protect KRFY. It's one spot on a constellation of democracy and you know, individual rights, First Amendment, and it needs to be protected at all times, and it needs to be supported. It is so valuable. And if it was not able to continue, the emptiness would be felt so much. And it is never safe. Yeah. It is never safe to say, yeah, this is going to be here. We don't know what the next 5 years is going to bring. We don't know.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to it. We always say that we try to bring news and information that informs and inspires. And when you're inspired, you become a participant. You think, you search for truth. And so that's kind of our tagline that we try to bring. So, and our listeners do support us. And we're fortunate in this small rural community to have this wonderful radio station called KRFY. And Ursula Rudenberg, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us that broad picture of what we're part of. And it kind of solidifies our foundation quite a bit.
Well, it's my pleasure, and we appreciate so much knowing that you're out there. It means so much to us, and you know, in my opinion, community radio people are part of the best that America has to offer. So it's always, you know, I do this because it's the world I want to live in. So it's a beautiful thing, and I hope you get a lot of support for KFY as you ask for funding. You need it, and you deserve it, and You also deserve the encouragement.
Well, thank you so much. Hope you have a beautiful day.
Thank you. You too.